Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Sri Prahlada Vacha.
Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Maranam Pada Sevanam, Archanam Vandanam Dasyam, Sakyam Atma Nivedanam, Iti Pumsharpita Vishnu, Bhaktischennavalakshana, Priyeta Bhagavatyada Tanmanye Ditamutama Sri Paraduvacha. Remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him. In other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So continuing with the purport, now in this section of the purport, Prabhupada analyzes the different processes, the nine different processes. So beginning one, Shravanam. Hearing of the holy name of the Lord, Shravanam, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the nine processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name is the beginning. Indeed, it is essential. As enunciated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaito Dharpana Marjanam, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform of understanding the personal form of the Lord. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And when one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. In this way, a devotee advances further and further toward complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form and qualities, his paraphernalia and everything pertaining to him. Therefore, the chronological process is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. This same process of chronological understanding holds true in chanting and remembering. When the chanting of the holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia is heard from the mouth of a pure devotee, his hearing and chanting are very pleasing. Srila Sanatan Goswami has forbidden us to hear the chanting of an artificial devotee or non-devotee. So, Lord Kapila Dev, he mentioned that in the association of pure devotees of the Lord, a hearing and chanting of the pastimes and activities of the Lord is very pleasing to the ear and to the heart. By such activity, one becomes advanced on the path of liberation. Thus he becomes free from material attachment, and his attachment and his attachment to Krishna becomes fixed. Thus real devotion and devotional service begin. So we are often warned by Srila Prabhupada against hearing the holy name or the Bhagavatam from professional persons. That is said to be like taking milk touched by the lips of a serpent. It becomes a very poisonous. One should only hear the Shastra, the Bhagavatam, through the bona fide parampara, and he should only receive the holy name through the bona fide parampara from a bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, he will misunderstand the Bhagavatam, and it will be very difficult to correct this misunderstanding. There's example of a piano school in Vienna who charges more for students who already know something about piano. because they have to be taught to forget that and to start again from the beginning. So, similarly, it's easier to implant the proper understanding in one who doesn't have any Shastric knowledge than it is to implant it in the heart of a person who has been following, say, Mayavad philosophy. Lord Chaitanya said that Mayavadi Bhashya Sunile Hoi Sarvanash, that by hearing the commentary of the Mayavadis, then everything is destroyed, one's spiritual life is destroyed. The Mayavadis like to use the Shastra because they know that the Shastra, like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, is widely accepted throughout India. And if one doesn't preach on the basis of Shastra, then no one will accept what he has to say. So therefore they want to use the Bhagavad Gita, but they want to ignore what Krishna is really saying. Just like that Dr. Radhakrishnan, he said, it's not unto the person Krishna that we should surrender, but to the unborn within Krishna. So Krishna says, surrender to me, but he's saying, no, 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 the unborn within Krishna. So like that, they use the Bhagavad Gita, they use Lord Krishna, and they try to justify their Mayavadi understanding on that basis. But this will just confuse a person, and he will not get the real essence of the instruction of Lord Krishna, which is bhakti, to become surrendered to Krishna and to engage wholeheartedly in his service and to have a personal relationship with him. Because Krishna actually expands the living entities because he wants to have loving relationships with them. This is his pleasure, his pastime. He enjoys this. So it's not that everything in the spiritual world is just void and formless and, you know, dry as a bone. No, there's so much variety, so much rasa there, loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees. So Krishna wants to draw that out of each and every person. He wants to draw out that loving reciprocation. So therefore he's telling us, you take to bhakti and you start offering me things with love and devotion. You start glorifying me. And I will reciprocate. Krishna says, "Ye yatamam prapajite, tamsta taiva bhajami aham, mama vartmana vartante manushya partha sarvasa." As they surrender to me, I will reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So Prabhupada said, if you take one step towards Krishna, he will take 10 steps towards you. If you want to be friends with Krishna, he said, Krishna will be friends with you. If you want to play tricks with Krishna, Krishna will play tricks with you. He'll put you under the control of the material energy. So Krishna is giving us that choice, but he wants us to see us act as persons. Because he has endowed the living entities with these personal qualities and some individual attributes and individual choice also, whether to serve him or not to serve him like that. He's not forcing the living entities to serve him, but he's giving a living entity a choice, if you would like. Because the living entity chooses to serve him, then out of his own volition, then he can manifest his love for Krishna in his own individual way also. So, like that, spiritual life is full of variety. And this is the nectar. As that loving reciprocation with Krishna develops, then that becomes genuine rasa. And this is real nectar, both for the devotee and for Krishna. Both are relishing these loving dealings. But that has to begin by hearing from the proper source, hearing the instruction of Krishna is so transcendentally potent that it can remove all the dirt from the heart, just as Prabhupada is quoted, Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhava Maha Devagni Nirvapanam Shreyas Koyarva Chandrikavataram Vidyavadu Jivanam Anandam Buddhivartanam Pratipatam Purnamritas Vadanam Sarvatma Snapanam Param Vajayati Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditioned life, of repeated birth and death. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss, and it helps us to taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. So that nectar is the loving reciprocation with Krishna. In the Bhagavatam, there's one verse, Pravista Karna Randrena Danam Bhava Sororoham Dunoti Samalam Krishna Salilashya Yatasarat. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam, enters the heart of the self-realized devotee and sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship with Krishna. And thus it cleanses the dust of material association such as lust, anger, and hankerings. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon the pools of muddy water. So in India, during the monsoon season, everything becomes muddy. Perhaps you've seen, if you've been there, you see the rivers become brown, the pools and lakes, pukurs, become brown with muddy water. But in autumn, there are also sometimes some rain, but it has a different effect. It cleanses the pools of muddy water and they become clear again. So this is the effect of Srimad Bhagavatam. The heart is muddy due to the, as Prabhupada said, dirty modes of material nature. These grinding of the modes of material nature, it contaminates a person's heart, and he's dragged this way and that way. You might have seen that there was once a cover of a BTG, a person, you know, who was like, he was like a puppet, just a human being, and he was being pulled by strings of different modes of material nature, like a puppet. There's also the picture in the Bhagavad Gita, that person who's on a stairs, you can go up or go down. So, you know, the fellow, you know, going down has got these ropes around his neck. Lust and anger and greed are pulling him down. That is Bhagavad Gita that said, what is it? Trivida Narakasya Dham. What is that verse? Trivida Narakasya Dham. Raja Tamas Tamo Bhava. Anyway, it means there are three gates leading to hell. Lust, anger, greed. Lust, anger, greed. Kama, Krodas, okay. Three gates leading to hell. So any sane man should give these up because they lead to the degradation of the soul. So we should understand it clearly. What is the result of giving in to lust, anger, and greed, that the heart will become contaminated and living it will be dragged down into a hellish condition of life. And that means suffering, repeated birth and death, again and again and again and again. So this means a lot of lamentation and misery. In a dark situation. But Krishna consciousness is like bright situation. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoya Andhakar Jaha Krishna Taha Maya Nahi Adhikar. That Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like darkness. Where there is Krishna, then, you know, there'll be no Maya. So if we introduce Krishna consciousness into our lives, then everything becomes completely changed. All the ghosts of material association, they become chased away. And the bright sun like Krishna becomes established in the heart of, and the consciousness of the devotee. So hearing is the way to begin this process. Hearing from the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name, and therefore the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendentally full of mellows. There are nice verses in the Bhagavatam which explain the position of the Bhagavatam. For example, Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samitam Uttama Shloka Charitam Chakara Bhagavan Rishi Nishrayaya Shlokasya Dhanam Svaschayanam Mahat. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God and is compiled by Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of God. It's meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. So it's very, very powerful. And in another place it said, Krishnes svadamopagate dharma jnana dibisaha kalonashta drishamesha purnaka dunoditaha. Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun and has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion and knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this Kali Yuga, they shall get light from this Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is like the sunlight in the darkness of Kali Yuga. The transcendental holy name of the Lord may be heard and chanted according to the attraction of the devotee. Again, the holy name has a special effect. The Bhagavatam and the holy name. The Kaler dosha nidhe rajan asti hi ekamahanguna kirtanad eva krishna sham mukta sanga param prajat. Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, but there's one good quality, that simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one is freed from material contamination and he is elevated to the transcendental platform. Iti soda sakam nam na kali kalmasanasana nata paratropaya sarva vedishu drishyate. These 16 words of the Hare Krishna mantra, they are specially meant to counteract the effects of all sinful activities. And anyone who wants to be free of the contamination of Kali Yuga must chant Hare Krishna mantra. After searching through all the Vedic literatures, one cannot find a better process than the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Suda Nitya Mukta Binat Bam Namanamino. The holy name of Krishna is like Chintamani, transcendental touchstone, and it is the reservoir of all transcendental rasas. It is completely transcendental and completely pure, and it's non-different from Krishna. So we should not underestimate then the power of the holy name or the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we are underestimating this simply due to our being contaminated by the modes of material nature. But the more purely we hear and chant, the more the influence of those modes is dissipated. And as Haridas Thakur said, it is like the sun rising in the morning. At first the light is faint, but as the sun rises, the light becomes brighter and brighter. So one may chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, or one may chant the holy name of Lord Rama, or Narasingha Dev, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishthan. The Lord has innumerable forms and names, and devotees may meditate upon a particular form and chant the holy name according to his attraction. The best course is to hear of the holy name, form, and so on from a pure devotee of the same standard as oneself. In other words, one who is attached to Krishna should hear and should chant and hear from other pure devotees who are also attached to Krishna. The same principle applies for devotees attracted by Lord Rama, Lord Narsingha, and other forms of the Lord. Because Krishna is the ultimate form of the Lord, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, it is best to hear about Lord Krishna's name, form, and pastimes from a realized devotee who is particularly attracted by the form of Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, great devotees like Sukadeva Goswami have specifically described Lord Krishna's holy name, form, and qualities. Unless one hears of devotional service. Therefore, hearing of the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is this verse, Tad Vag Vishargo Janataga Viplavo Yasmin Pratislokam Abhajivatyapi Namanyanantasya Yason Kitaniyat Shinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadhava. Well, just prior to that verse, actually, there's a verse that states that those literatures which do not describe the transcendental name, form, qualities of the unlimited Supreme Lord are like a place of pilgrimage for crows. You know, since the all perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. And then this verse, that on the other hand, the verse is describing the name, form, and qualities of Anantadev, the unlimited Supreme Lord, are able to vanquish all the sinful reactions of the entire world. Therefore, even if such verses are improperly composed, devotees hear them, describe them, and accept them as bona fide and authorized. In this connection, Sridhar Swami has remarked that a pure devotee takes advantage of another pure devotee by trying to hear from him about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord. If there is no such opportunity, he alone chants and hears the Lord's holy name. Prabhupada actually quoted this verse in the introduction to the Bhagavatam, and especially when he wrote the first Bhagavatams, you know, he was implying that the English, it may not be, you know, so grammatically perfect, but still, you know, the potency is there, and if one hears, it will act. Once Prabhupada said that if you're in a foreign country somewhere and there's a fire in the house, you know, somehow you'll manage to make it known to others there's a fire, isn't it? Once we were in Denmark and we were on traveling Sankirtan, and we were staying in some hotel, and there was supposed to be only two of us in the room, but I think we had about six or seven people in there. And in the middle of the night, you know, one of the devotees woke up and says, "It's very hot in here." He put his hand on the wall and it was like burning hot. And then somebody said, "Wow, there might be a fire in here somewhere." It's like a slightly, you know, smoky smell as well. So someone opened the door and had to shut it again immediately because there was like a wall of smoke, dense wall of smoke, and it started coming into the room. So then somebody looked out of the window and they saw there were flames leaping out of that window next door. It was like 2 a.m. and we were up on the third floor. And then one of the devotees thought, well, if we tie sheets together, then the devotees can get out the window. So they tied all the sheets together. So then someone was just about to, you know, go out. I said, I maybe should test it first, you know, put a suitcase on the end. And so they put suitcase on the end and, you know, put it out the window, and, you know, halfway down the sheet snapped. So then, you know, we were looking out the window. Some drunk came tottering down the street, and he tried to, you know, alert him, but, you know, he wasn't very interested. He just went on past. So it was getting hotter and hotter and hotter, and the flames were getting bigger and bigger. And then finally some other person came, and we were just calling fire, fire. And, you know, there was a different language, but anyway, he understood, and he went inside the hotel and he woke up the people. I guess they were all drunk downstairs. And they called the fire brigade, and the fire brigade came and, you know, came into the building and came up and got all the devotees out, guided them out through the smoky corridors. And all the devotees walked out, you know, with all their luggage, like six, seven devotees just walked out in the hotel. Staff were just, you know, looking at us. Anyhow, you know, if you're in a foreign country, if there's fire, somehow you'll convince the people and they'll understand. So like that, sometimes Prabhupada, you know, he would be speaking in a Hindi or Bengali, and he would tell devotees, just listen, it's purifying. Once in London, we were at some program in a Hindu temple, and Prabhupada, you know, he decided to speak in Hindi. But he said, all of you stay here and listen. And in Tokyo also once, on Janmashtami, he was reading in Sanskrit from the Bhagavatam for several hours. He told the devotees, just sit and listen. The transcendental sound vibration. And so we should take any chance we can get to hear from devotees who are serious in Krishna consciousness, and this will have the effect of purifying the heart. And if one doesn't hear, then he'll have difficulty in spiritual life. Sometimes we see their devotees, they stop coming to class. They think, well, I've heard it all before. It's a so-and-so not interesting speaker. And, you know, what's the use of going there? And I'll just better, you know, stay at home, or maybe I'll listen to a tape or chant my rounds. But, you know, the tendency comes, you know, not to hear attentively if one doesn't come and sit in the association of devotees. So that's why Prabhupada established the Srimad Bhagavatam class. And he gave us the instruction we should come every day. Never mind who's giving the class. Just come and listen. And if you don't think that class is interesting, well, you give class. And if you think that your classes are not very interesting, then just read the books. Read out. You know, there's no harm. Once I was in London and Sri Dayananda Maharaj was passing through, so he's only there for one day. And he's one of the best speakers in ISKCON, isn't it? Very humorous. And also he knows Sanskrit. And he's got a very brilliant mind. Very good command of philosophy. Knows many languages. Like that. So he came there. So naturally many, many devotees came there to listen to him speaking. But somehow that day, you know, he just read the verses and the purport. He didn't even say a single thing himself. He just read Sanskrit and then the verse and the purport and the next verse and the next Sanskrit and then the translation and the purport. Whole class just like that. So these words are transcendentally potent. So even we can just read them out. That way you can also get a little practice if you don't have confidence. Some devotees may feel shy, isn't it? Oh, I can't give class. But and you just sit and read, and make a few comments here and there, and gradually you'll become a little bit practiced, and your confidence will grow. And say you learn a few verses that we were reading the other day, that you know we should recite the verses in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This will help us to meditate on Krishna and fix our mind more and more in Shastra and in Krishna. And it will also give authority to our speeches. You listen to Prabhupada's lectures. Again and again he's quoting verses throughout his lectures, through his purports. So if you're speaking and you quote some verses that authenticates your lecture. So like that, devotees should take the trouble to learn verses from the scriptures, and in this way you can develop the ability to speak on the transcendental subject matter. It's a question of first hearing nicely, then one can speak. Prabhupada said that his spiritual master actually noted him for this, that he hears nicely. I think it was in Vrindavan, wasn't it, when he went to the Brajmandal Parikrama.
And when Prabhupada, it was already going on, Prabhupada was a householder. He came from Allahabad, I think from Allahabad to Vrindavan. And the pilgrims were at work. Was it Dauji or someone? Koshi, was it Koshi? And there was a artic of the deity. What's the deity there called? Yeah, the other pilgrims had gone, right, to see that deity, Sheshasai. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was giving a lecture. So Prabhupada had the choice either to go with the others to the artic of the deity or to stay and hear the lecture. But he decided to hear the lecture. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that, "I have noted him, he hears nicely." So if one hears nicely, attentively, then you know, he'll be able to repeat that. And it's not that we have to concoct something. Prabhupada said, just repeat as you've heard from your spiritual master. You don't have to change anything. If you change something, you'll spoil everything. You know, just read again and again and again. Hear lectures, say from tips, and from other devotees. And in that way, you can imbibe the philosophy and you can speak on the philosophy. And you're speaking on the philosophy, it will, because it's bona fide, it will influence others and it will change their hearts also, and they will take to Krishna consciousness. So this is the system of parampara. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita is mentioned that Lord Chaitanya, he everywhere he went, he taught people to chant Hare Krishna. Those people taught other people to chant, and then those people taught even more people, and those people taught even more people. And this way the parampara was expanded widely. So this is the system that beginning from hearing, then we glorify Krishna and chant the holy name of Krishna, and there will be genuine effect and potency. And of course, one of the best ways of glorifying Krishna is to distribute books. Prabhupada told me once that whether you speak about Krishna or you give a book about Krishna, this is the same thing. He said, this is the guru's business, to give Krishna to others. What is the meaning of guru? Means teacher, and the one who delivers Krishna. Jari deko tarikaha Krishna upadesh amaragya guruha tara edesh. Whoever you meet, tell him about Krishna. In this way become guru and you deliver the whole country. So you can tell him about Krishna, you can distribute books about Krishna. This is the spiritual master's work. And Prabhupada said he wants all his disciples to become spiritual masters. It means disciples, it means grand disciples. Everyone has to take up this work. We are indebted to Krishna, we are indebted to Prabhupada, so how do we repay them? We repay them by telling Krishna, telling about Krishna to others. And Krishna says that one who is preaching his glories is the most dear to him. So any question?
We're going to continue reading from the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, from the chapter entitled London, A Dream Fulfilled. At one end of the estate lived a bricklayer and his wife in a small, neglected Georgian house. Hired by George to build a recording studio on the property, the bricklayer had only recently moved to Tittenhurst. A tough, burly man, he never spoke to the devotees until one day he asked several of them if they believed in ghosts. "Oh yes," Kulashekara said, "Prabhupada says there are ghosts." "I don't believe," the bricklayer said. "My wife is having dreams, but I don't believe in ghosts." The bricklayer's wife revealed that both she and her husband had been hearing something at night. Last night they had gone running to John Lennon's house, terrified, complaining of sounds, chains rattling, boot heels pounding, and the noise of something like a body being dragged across the floor. The bricklayer had seen his wife violently shaken by the shoulders, although no one else was there. When the devotees told Prabhupada, he said, "You tell John Lennon that if he wants, we can get rid of these ghosts." Mukunda relayed the message, but John had already invited his friend, a white witch, to come and exorcise the ghost. The warlock visited the bricklayer's cottage, and a few devotees tagged along. Over the fireplace in the main room, they found a carving of a person with a ghost coming out of his forehead, and in the opposite wall, mahogany runes. "These are ancient witch runes," the warlock said, shaking his head. "I can't do anything here." When John asked the devotees to try their method, Prabhupada directed them. At the bricklayer's cottage, they should sprinkle water offered to Krishna in the doorways, blow conch shells, and then have kirtan. A group of devotees went, and Kulashekhar led the kirtan. After half an hour of chanting, Kulashekhar felt a great release of pressure within the room, and the kirtan became ecstatic. The devotees returned to their engagement, assuring John that the ghosts would not return, and the bricklayer and his wife moved in again. The next morning, Prabhupada passed the old cottage on his walk. "So, how is the ghost?" he asked. "No news, Prabhupada," Kulashekhar replied. The following morning, Prabhupada asked again, "How is the ghost? Would they like to have him back?" Years ago in India, Prabhupada said, when he was running his chemical business, he had detected ghosts in the building at night. "What did you do?" one of the devotees asked. "I simply chanted Hare Krishna and the ghosts would go away," Prabhupada then opened his eyes wide and gestured with both hands, mimicking the frightened workers in the plant who had come running to him. "Babaji, Babaji, there is a ghost, there is a ghost." The devotees laughed. "Actually," Prabhupada said, "there are many ghosts here, especially over the stable areas. They are attached to this place, but they will not harm you if you chant Hare Krishna." Prabhupada was anxious to leave Tittenhurst, and by late October, some of the devotees had moved to Berry Place. Prabhupada no longer had any business at Tittenhurst. Mr. Lennon was an influential person who had seemed interested in Krishna, but now there was no point in Prabhupada staying at his estate. Yoko and her ex-husband Dan, now John's manager, were also pressing John to be rid of the devotees. Dan complained that the devotees were trying to take over the place. The devotees, on the other hand, complained to John that Dan and Yoko were misrepresenting them. On one side were Dan and Yoko, and on the other, the devotees. John was in the middle. He had to choose. John told Mukunda that as far as he was concerned, he got along fine with the devotees, but the people around him were having difficulty. He would give the devotees a couple more weeks to move to their new temple in the city. The devotees were already in the process of moving to Berry Place, and Mukunda had found an apartment for Prabhupada at a short drive from the temple. In a few days, everything would be ready for Prabhupada to move. On the day Prabhupada left Tittenhurst, he stopped at his car and said, "I want to say goodbye to a few friends first." He then took a last walk through the grounds, giving careful attention to the trees, sometimes touching their leaves, just as on his morning walks. Then he left. The next day, a severe storm swept through the Tittenhurst estate, breaking windows and uprooting trees. November 3, 1969, Prabhupada moved into his furnished apartment on Baker Street, a 10-minute drive from the Berry Place Temple. After 2 months in London, he was anxious to see his temple open, and Shamsundar was working hard, although progressing slowly. For the temple's interior, Shamsundar had an artistic concept taken from photographs he'd seen of the Ajanta Caves, South Indian temples with walls and ceilings of carved stone. His inspiration was to produce a similar effect using California redwood he and Mukunda had shipped to England a year ago. On first hearing the plans, Prabhupada had asked, "Why make it so artistic?" But Shamsundar had been so set in the idea that Prabhupada had permitted him. With the ceiling partly finished, there was no turning back. Shamsundar toiled day and night, yet each day the temple design seemed to grow more elaborate, with the walls and floor fashioned of solid redwood and the ceiling lined with redwood arches. Shamsundar took great care to see that each piece fit nicely into place. As Shamsundar inched along, devotees joked that the room looked like an upside-down boat, but Prabhupada encouraged him, telling him it was very beautiful. Prabhupada often allowed his disciples to work as they liked. He reasoned that they were raising the money and could spend it in Krishna's service as they pleased. He did not care to interfere in every detail of a disciple's service, especially when that disciple was strong-headed and had ideas that were not harmful or obstructive. All Prabhupada's disciples were ultimately under his absolute decision, but he was often lenient, 80% lenient, he would sometimes say. Samsundar particularly thrived on having his own big projects. He had arranged for the Mantra Rock Dance in San Francisco, built the first Rath Yatra carts, established a friendship with George Harrison, and now he was designing a temple. Prabhupada allowed it watchfully, like a father. Consulting the Vedic calendar, Prabhupada chose December 14 for the temple opening celebration, and despite predictions from Samsundar and others that the deadline would be impossible to meet, Prabhupada ordered invitations printed immediately. The devotees had tremendous work to do and little time. Not only did they have the temple to complete, but also Prabhupada's quarters on the second floor and the kitchen in the basement. Faced with their tight deadline, they worked harder. As Prabhupada was anxious about the temple opening, he also was anxious about publishing the first volume of Krishna, but he had no money. According to printers' estimates, the book would cost $19,000. Prabhupada told Samsundar, $9,000. Prabhupada told Samsundar to ask his friend George for a donation. Samsundar, who had always been careful not to ask George for money, was hesitant, but Prabhupada insisted and Samsundar gave in. George agreed, but regretted it afterward. Then Samsundar began to feel sorry. After all, he hadn't really wanted to ask George, and George hadn't really wanted to be asked. When Prabhupada heard of this, he invited George to see him. George told Prabhupada that every day people were asking him for money. But when Prabhupada explained the importance of the Krishna book and how George's donation would be devotional service to Krishna, George dismissed his regrets. He also agreed to write a foreword to the volume. George, I didn't really think I was qualified to write the foreword to Prabhupada's book, but one way of looking at it is, because I am known, it would help. But from the other point of view, it could really hinder, because not everyone wants to listen or to believe what I say. There are a lot of people who would be put off just because I'm saying it. I mean, if I picked up a book on Krishna and the foreword was written by Frank Zappa or somebody like or somebody like that, I would think, God, maybe I don't want to know about it. So I thought that, although he asked me, maybe Prabhupada didn't really want me to write the foreword. But it was one of those things I couldn't get out of. Everyone had their minds made up. You're writing the foreword and that's it. So I just did it. When Srila Prabhupada asked to watch the moon landing, the devotees rented a television and placed it in Prabhupada's living room. Prabhupada took his massage as usual, sitting in a chair before the television. Purushottam announced, "Well, Prabhupada, it's about time, so I'll turn on the television and soon we'll be getting some pictures from the astronauts out of space." A reporter was speaking from Cape Canaveral, Florida. "We are just about to get the first pictures on this historic occasion." The picture appeared fuzzy, then cleared. The spaceship had landed on the moon. As the astronauts emerged from the ship, they slowly eased themselves down to the moon's surface. Purushottam was in ecstasy. Dhananjaya. "I was attempting to massage Prabhupada's head and at the same time watch the program. All of a sudden, as the men were landing, Prabhupada motioned for me to sit in front of him, so I came around. As soon as I sat down, Prabhupada started to massage my head. I was quite embarrassed. 'You have forgotten how to massage properly,' he asked. 'This is how you do it.' He massaged my head for about 2 minutes. Then I stood behind Prabhupada and again began massaging his head. By this time, the astronauts were moving across the landscape. They had gotten out their little American flag and were sticking it in the ground and were jumping up and down. Apparently they were defying gravity, because every time they jumped up, they would float through the air and then gently land again. There was a lot of jubilation and sounds from them." So, Purushottam, Prabhupada asked, "They have come to the moon?" "Yes, Prabhupada," Purushottam said excitedly. "They have landed on the moon." Prabhupada smiled. Dhananjaya. "Again, Prabhupada motioned me to the front. I moved around and sat down. I thought he wanted me to massage him from the front, but again he put his hands on my head and massaged. He said, 'Can't you learn this simple thing, massaging my head? I have been watching the television and not giving my full attention to my service.'" I had been watching the television and not giving my full attention to my service. I tried again, but again Prabhupada said, "You still don't know how to do this?" I said, "Well, Prabhupada, I'm trying my hardest." He laughed and said, "That's all right, continue." Prabhupada asked Purushottam, "So, what can you see?" "They're exploring the moon's surface, he said. "So what is there?" "Well, it looks like they have landed inside a crater somewhere, and the ground is sandy with some rocks. Oh, look, they're showing some shadows from some of the rocks that are lying around. That's all you can see? There are no people, there are no trees, there are no rivers, there are no buildings." "No," Purushottam replied, "the moon is barren." "They have not landed on the moon," Prabhupada said emphatically. "This is not the moon." Later, when Malati brought in Prabhupada's lunch, he said, "What Malati has done, she has made this little khichdi for Krishna, and that is far greater than what they have done." Even though Prabhupada's quarters were incomplete and temple renovation made Sevenbury Place noisy and hectic, Prabhupada decided to move in. "I am not attached to a comfortable apartment," he said. "My attachment is to living in the association of devotees." He was moving into the temple at a time when the record sales were low and the devotees were having to purchase supplies piecemeal whenever they got money. Yet with Prabhupada living with them and supervising their work, they were satisfied. Tamal Krishna arrived from Los Angeles, and in addition to supervising much of the construction, he began taking the devotees out daily to chant in the streets and sell Back to Godhead magazines. Yamuna was sewing curtains from morning till night. Ishan, Sam Sundar, and others were working every possible hour on the renovation, and every day Prabhupada would walk through the building to see the progress. With only 1 week left until the opening, Sam Sundar still labored on the temple ceiling. He had not even begun the altar. Again, the other devotees complained to Prabhupada that Sam Sundar was too slow, but Prabhupada replied, "He wants to make it artistic. Let him do it." Sam Sundar, this time on his own, asked George for a donation for an altar. George gave £2,000, and Sam Sundar picked out a slab of golden Siena marble and two slabs of red marble. Although Prabhupada had a pair of 17-inch carved wood deities of Radha and Krishna, he didn't plan to use them, and the size of the altar Sam Sundar was building clearly required larger deities. So, if you don't mind, I'll stop there. It's not so far to the end of the chapter, but now the story about how Prabhupada got Radha Landaneshwara is going to be coming up. And I thought that, since next week Mukunda Maharaj will be here, you should ask him to read this and speak about it, because he was present with Srila Prabhupada, so that'll be very nice for you to have that recounted personally by him. So we'll stop there. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.